2 is open. Good morning, everyone. We are going to open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3459. We have two state reps with us here, Reps Gomberg and Smith. Thank you. Sorry.
Can we get a cup of coffee, Jack?
Before we start, we will have a quick briefing.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3459, it's making changes to a statute, a property tax exemption statute this committee is fairly familiar with, the 307-130, that's the literary, charitable, and scientific organizations exemption, and it's a bit of the catch-all exemption. And the change that's being made in House Bill 3459 is it's expanding the property tax exemption to include all real and personal property of a retail store that's owned by a nonprofit corporation. If the retail store deals exclusively in donated inventory and operates with substantial support from volunteers. So there's already provisions within the exemption related to retail stores. But the change of 3459 is the requirements where the net the proceeds go of the store. So the retail store has to be a nonprofit corporation that's donating or using those retail store sales, have to be donated to support nonprofits that provide animal rescue services, manufacturers or providers of goods or services in return for the value of goods coming to the retail store, supporting an entity that provides spaying and neutering services for pets of individuals who are residing in households with annual household income at or below 80% of the area median income, or for the purpose of aiding domesticated animals in furtherance of the purpose for which the nonprofit corporation was organized. There's also a number of just statute cleanup changes in the measure as well.
Oh, okay. That's what that is.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast. Thank you very much for hearing 3459 this morning. I will tell you that the small problem that we're trying to address here was discovered rather late in the session, so this bill got a late start, but has moved very quickly through the process, and I appreciate you scheduling it today so that hopefully we can wrap this up and get it done before we are done. The issue is this, Mr. Chairman, that the Department of Revenue issued a set of guidelines on property tax exemptions for nonprofits, which indicated in general terms that if an institution, a thrift store, was operating to support the community and to reduce public expenses, that it would qualify to be exempt from property taxes. And we had several thrift stores that set up to do just that and to provide to support for either public animal shelters or for nonprofit animal shelters. But at some point earlier this year, one of the assessors took a second look at the statute and realized that statute says that you don't only have to do public good, you have to do public good related to people. And therefore, that these thrift stores that were operating to support animal shelters, whether public or nonprofit, were not exempt and would, in fact, have to pay property taxes on the property they had acquired. We brought forward this proposal with the support of the counties to try and bring those nonprofit thrift stores into the exemption arena. And we put sideboards on it to make sure that they are indeed operating on a nonprofit basis, sideboards such as having donated materials rather than purchased materials, making sure that they were working with volunteers and that the funds were going to a designated nonprofit purpose. It's a relatively simple bill, Mr. Chairman, but I think it makes a difference, particularly for folks that are trying to make a difference in their own communities. And I'll turn things over to my colleague from the South Coast, and then we'd both be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. David Brocksmith, State Representative, House District 1. I'll just be brief. There's some work that was done in my former life as a commissioner that we moved our local animal shelter into a standalone nonprofit. It's an no-kill shelter that takes animals from other shelters around the state and Northern California. We have a number of thrift stores that support this animal shelter, and not just in Curry County, but also throughout the district. And so this is a good bill, and we appreciate your hearing it and the your support.
Questions of our two state reps from the coast. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have a team with you or constituents with you on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, we didn't bring anybody over here today. We just wanted to move things through quickly. It got unanimous support in the House. I hope that it would do the same in the Senate. If you want me to bring a crowd in, I certainly can, but I'd rather just move the bill along.
We don't do dog and pony shows here in this committee, so I'm glad you did, but I just wanted to make sure there was nobody who drove over here and was waiting to testify. So thank you both.
You're easy. You laugh at anything.
Committee, I get a nodding consensus here on whether you want to move forward or let this breathe for a while.
Move it.
Okay. I'll take a motion, Senator Bertschinger.
Are we in a work session?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2377 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. 3459.
I got the wrong bill open. 3459. Thank you.
Senator Bertschinger moves House Bill 3459 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bertschinger?
Yes.
Senator Ryder?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Yes.
Chair
Haas? House votes aye. The measure goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation, and I will be the carrier. Thank you, sir. You're here on 2377. I don't know that we have the paperwork in yet. We do have it in. Kyle, is that?
Yeah.
Okay, can you give us a briefing here? I'll open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2377.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2377, and we do have a dash B6 amendment, and I'll describe that in just one second. But House Bill 2377 with the B6 amendment is doing is it's creating a new property tax exemption, and this is one that would be permissive to a city or county, and it's relating to it's an exemption for newly rehabilitated or constructed qualified multi-unit rental housing. And so the property tax exemption is allowed for up to 10 years, but it does require the city or the county to establish a schedule up to 10 years for the number of years in which the exemption is available, the property tax exemption is available. And that schedule will work in tandem with the percentage of the units of the multi-unit rental housing that is rented to households with annual income at or below either 80% of the household median income, or it will be 120% with the B6 amendment. So the exemption is up to 10 years, but the higher the percentage that is rented to those the specified households below the 80% or the 120%, depending on if you adopt the amendment, the greater the number of years of the exemption. So it could be up to 10 years, but it could be somewhere in between, depending upon how the city and the county design that schedule. It does require the definition of area median income to be adjusted to the size of the household, so larger size households would have a greater area median income limit. And it does limit the exemption eligibility for the property that's being rehabilitated to only that first rehabilitation. So you can't rehabilitate a property once, 7 years later, rehabilitate it again, and start the exemption over. Much of the administration and oversight of the program is with the city or the county. There is a clawback contained in the measure, so if the property, the multi-unit rental housing, fails to continue to rent, I guess, to the qualified households at or below the income limit, then the previous exemption amount of the taxes would be clawed back for up to the full 10 years. And then the initial year of the exemption qualification does sunset January 2nd, 2027. So if the first year for a piece of property is 2026, they could have that full 10 years, but no new properties, no rehabilitated or newly built properties would be able to begin the qualification of the exemption after that 2027 sunset.
All right, so if we're going from 80%, I'm just, if you can get our brains around the calculus here, going to 80% to 120%.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I should note, too, in the meeting materials, I did put, there's a table in there that lists all the different property tax exemptions to try to help with some comparing and contrasting if you're looking at how does this compare to some of the other housing property tax exemptions that are on there. But moving from the 80%, so to receive the exemption, or at least part of the exemption, the number of years for the exemption, the property has to be rented to households that are in this case, 80% or below. So that would be 80% or below of the median income. By moving that up to 120%, really you're moving from a definitional standpoint from maybe what would be more considered low-income housing. Sometimes that's described as 60% of their median income or below, but certainly 80% does fit into that. Moving up to 120% fits more in line with what's described as workforce housing. So these could be households that are making greater than the median, but it could be more reflective of, I guess, individuals that do have median income jobs and those such. So it would encourage housing that would still be built to maybe fit more of those needs as well, not just the lower income spectrum.
Okay, and the B6 came from where? Okay, Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the amendment, mm-hmm. It was an error on my part. This bill was always meant to be workforce housing related. When it comes to our teachers and throughout the state, they're on the lower end of the spectrum. For example, they're having. I know in my district, and throughout my district. Excuse me, David Brock Smith, State Representative, House District 1. We have a lot of baby boomer teachers that are retiring, and we don't have any housing for the new incoming teachers. And so the AMI in my district is roughly $40,000, but these teachers, they make between $45,000 and $52,000. And so they would not qualify at the 80 percentile. And in a lot of our communities in the South Coast, we have just in small town of Port Orford with 1,100 folks, that's my hometown, we have three low-income apartment units, complexes, excuse me, within our communities. And so although it allows the 120% through the amendment, it's still up to the local government because it's less than 120% to really define through their ordinance procedure what fits their communities best. And Kyle, that's, am I correct with that? Yeah. So although we're just giving them the option to not be confined with below 80%, but really if they see a need through their ordinance procedure that they need workforce housing for their policemen, firemen, teachers, and so forth that are really at the median income spectrum, they can design it to be not more than 105% of AMI in their jurisdiction.
Wouldn't this, just devil's advocate, crowd out the people, say, under 80, the 80%, would the demand be met there? I mean, you do have a lot of people in your community who are at 80% and below, for sure. So now you're putting in line people who are above that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, moving the dial to the 120% does not disallow local government from setting their jurisdiction when they draft their ordinance to allow this to move forward at 80%. Completely up to the local jurisdiction. We're just moving the threshold to 120 so that they're not placed at 80% or below. So if they wanted to be 95% because that fixed their demographics better, then this would allow that to happen. And I know that Emily's here from the cities and she can mm-hmm. Speak to this as well.
Any questions of Rock Smith, Senator Boquist?
Hey, Representative, I'm not sure I agree or disagree, but I'm fine with the bill. But I do have a more procedural question. This sure. is Tuesday. If we stick this amendment in here, I mean, you risk this bill not getting back to your chamber and getting concurrence before the end of session. Are you fine with that? I mean, I don't care one way or the other. I'm just looking for your opinion. Being realistic here.
Chair Hess, Senator Boquist, I would much rather have the bill. I would very much prefer to have the bill with the amendment.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. I'm perfectly fine with that. It's just you're rolling the dice, not us. So,
Can I ask, Mr. Chair, since I am the freshman here, what if this passes out today, when would it be, what are the odds of when it would be heard on the Senate floor?
You want me to take a stab at that, Mr. Chair? I mean, if the bill is passed today, it'll have to be encumbered. It probably would not be reported out to the Secretary of the Senate till tomorrow or maybe the next day. And that's just procedural behind our scenes. So that's Thursday. It would then possibly be read first read or second read Thursday or Friday.
If we have floor Saturday.
And then it would be third read Saturday or Monday. It would then, once it passes the floor, have to be once again put together and probably transferred Tuesday or Wednesday of next week back to your chamber, if we're lucky. And then at that point, it would have to be second read and then third read, which two separate days. I'm only pointing it out here because I asked the same question at a hearing earlier to make sure that you want to assume that risk. I don't care. I'm fine either way.
It's a tough question.
Do you need some help from somebody else?
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll make that decision here on the committee. You can You can drop back and we'll listen to a few witnesses and we'll discuss it when everybody's testified. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thanks. We'll call up Stacy Michelson and Eric Arandoa.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Stacy Michelson with the Association of Oregon Counties, here today to speak in favor of House Bill 2377. Just a little bit of background from AOC's perspective. We started a housing subcommittee, early last year, recognizing that housing was a crisis in all of our counties, not only the rental issue in the metro area, but for our eastern Oregon counties. There are issues with maintenance of adequate homes. I've heard that Lake County, for example, has about 20 BLM FTE that they can't fill because they don't have housing that anyone who would take those positions wants to come in and live in. And we all know that the coast has issues with an abundance of short-term rentals and lack of rentals for workforce. So we've really been trying to figure out where counties can plug in on housing, given that much of the policy really happens at the city level. And so when Representative Brock Smith brought this bill to us, it was something our folks got pretty excited about. Cliche as it is, provides another tool in the toolbox for local governments, both cities and counties. But the benefit of the way that this bill is crafted is it's really pretty open-ended, whereas a lot of the current programs that would allow our members to offer a property tax exemption are fairly restrictive in terms of requirements of being near transportation hubs, related to vertical housing, and things of that nature that for counties specifically, when we're talking about unincorporated areas, that our folks would really be dealing with. Those things just aren't quite as applicable. So the open-ended nature of 2377 makes it a much more useful tool for counties who would be dealing with areas that are not necessarily in population hubs like our partners at the city would. So it's for that reason that we think it would be a really good option for our counties as they try to grapple with how they can work on housing and support their partners at the city level. Thanks.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Erin Doyle here on behalf of League of Oregon Cities. In support of House Bill 2377, there are a couple of things I just wanted to talk about. One is the flexibility that this tool has been mentioned in pretty much everyone talking about the bill. But the concept of creating a schedule at the local level is a really good opportunity for the local government to sit down with the development community and make sure that these projects pencil out. Part of the reason why we don't get housing that's directed at these income levels, be it 80% or 120% MFI, is largely because to build to that rental point with meeting all of the requirements and standards of building is not necessarily economically the same picture. So this property tax exemption creates a way where we can maybe bring some of those costs down for the builders over the long-term life of the project. But by putting it into a schedule that lasts for that 10-year period, we're really knowing exactly how much money we're giving up at the front of, and ensuring that we're getting enough bang for the buck that we're giving up. And by having that conversation with the developer before we put the schedule in place, it's starting to sound a lot like, and I know Mr. Chandler will be very pleased with this, inclusionary zoning voluntary. So that way folks know that we are investing as well as asking them to invest without putting a mandate, which a lot of our communities aren't necessarily as comfortable with as others. But our waivers, our fee waivers, our SDC waivers, those cut against a bigger set of financing issues that we might have. And by creating this smaller property tax exemption, we can create that partnership between the development community and the city and the county and all the other property taxing districts to get folks into homes, which is preferable than asking them to live somewhere else. The other piece of it is in looking at a lot of our cities, especially in areas that are heavily tourist-oriented, like the coast, the gorge, some of those folks are looking at places where they're trying to bring in workforce to work for the city, or maybe they're hourly workers who are, you know, staffing all those destinations that folks come to the coast or the gorge or Central Oregon for, but they can't actually afford to live in the place that they work. And when you're looking at coastal communities in particular, there's nowhere really else to go. Otherwise, you're driving 2 hours to get to a job that, you know, it's maybe not cost effective. We've actually lost city managers to a lack of housing supply. This won't address that level of reimbursement, but it is a way to kind of create that flexibility within the housing market, so that maybe we're encouraging more development or redevelopment of properties so that they end up as long-term rentals as opposed to redevelopment into short-term rentals, which we need those too because we love our economic development through tourism. But, you know, we need both because you can't just have tourism and nowhere for tourists to go. That kind of ends up in a poor cycle as well. But allowing the city to make that schedule means that we're looking at what the cost is to our bottom line as well. And also by putting a time limit on how long that schedule is going to be in place means that we know exactly how long we're giving it up. And then eventually those properties come back fully on the rolls and we've created a lot more housing, which, you know, more housing has an economic benefit of more units available, which drives down overall costs, supply and demand. That's as far as I got it in the econ. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the cities or the counties? Thank you both. And Ness?
My name is Ann Nessie. I'm new here. I'm testifying for Tex Furnace, Oregon, in lieu of Jody. We've discussed this bill quite a bit. We think it needs amendments. Passing a housing bill is a very serious issue when you don't have revenue that's cutting into the general fund and schools. And once you pass it, you know, if we find a better bill that really addresses the problem better, you know, then you're kind of stuck. So we're recommending that possibly it be a pilot project or put an amendment on it. Whatever you think would work best for the long term for families in Oregon. We think it has a lack of detail right now in the bill. City councils and counties, if we had trouble understanding the bill, we think they will too. And we don't, if you have as a pilot project, then you'll see whether it works or not to solve the problem. It's a big problem. So. That's what we're recommending.
Questions? Thank you, Anne. John Chandler.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here in support of House Bill 2377, and a devout wish that Representative Brock Smith would have been in the legislature during the 10 or 15 years we were smacking each other around about inclusionary zoning. This is exactly the kind of idea that we were hoping would have come out of the conversations in with our local government partners and with the state about using the hydraulics of the marketplace to get builders and local governments to work together towards an affordable housing outcome. I think this is an excellent bill. To be bright honest with you, I don't know how well it'll work, but I do know it's a tool that ought to be tried. And I'm looking at the staff's analysis of the other programs that are in place right now. That's the first time I'd seen that. That was excellent work. Most of them were not designed with for-profit developers at the table or in mind. And if we're really going to get at the affordable housing problem somehow, some way, we've got to move beyond the traditional not-for-profit sector and into the for-profit sector. And a bill like this, I think, will work. I'm confident it will, to get my guys together with the local governments that were just testifying in favor of the bill to come up with plans that will help offset the cost of providing workforce housing. We are in support of the amendments proposed. I think having that broader income range is going to be very helpful in a lot of communities that are really struggling to get. And I'm not, this is not to take away from the low-income housing, but to get that workforce, that missing middle housing. You almost have to get up to 120% of median income in a lot of these communities. As far as the timing, it'd be presumptuous for me to suggest what you should do one way or the other on that, although I was interested in the colloquy about how long the session might last. That was entertaining. It could have gone on, been a little more precise, frankly, if it's not too much trouble. But I'll certainly help should you adopt those amendments, and should it require then a concurrence vote, I'd be happy to offer to help Representative Brock Smith some effort moving things forward expeditiously, which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. Excellent bill. Really appreciate him bringing it forward. Glad to take any questions.
Thank you. Senator Riley.
Just a comment. I was leaning towards a yes on this, but
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, remember, Riley, you're sitting right here, you're killing me. I even liked your shoes several times this session.
I'm still leaning towards a yes on this, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
You're right.
I thought you were asking some.
No, I'm not asking any questions.
Okay.
But the good representative apparently is going to accept Mr. Chandler's, you know, offer of assistance. So I'm ready to move it when you are. I don't care.
This is highly unorthodox representative coming up for the second time. We tend to ban that around here. But since you're a freshman and you're friends with John Chandler, we're going to make an exception.
I didn't know if John Chandler being a colleague of mine after Senator Riley's comments was a good thing or not. But I just wanted to address some tax comments earlier. We just need to remember, and I know all of you do, that with the building of these multifamily dwellings, if it's a new construction, the property taxes on the pre-building are still going to be paid at the same level they were paid before. So when it comes to the exemptions for a period of up to 10 years, if that property owner is the local jurisdictions or local governments will still, you need 51% of them to sign off on it, of course, but also if that ground was worth $500,000, excuse me, then those property taxes pre-building are still going to be paid at the $500,000 level. So nobody's losing anything as far as the taxes go to the local governments.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both.
And I will add, Mr. Chair, that I am willing to take the risk with the dash twos and coming over for actually, concurrence if it's
B6s.
B6s, you mean?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm not moving these, right?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. You don't have paperwork?
We do.
You don't have paperwork?
Yeah.
Got the fiscal end. Are you happy, Mr. Chair?
I am, if you're ready to go.
Mr. Chair, I move the B6s dated 6/21/17 into 2377.
Senator Boquist moves the B6 amendment into House Bill 2377. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair, I move 2377 as amended by the B6s to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2377 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Rector.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yes.
Chair Hatch.
Hatch votes aye. This is a housing bill, Senator Taylor. Carry this measure.
I would be honored.
Taylor will carry. We'll close out the work session here and go to the last one on our list today, and open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3435. Well, look who's here.
Hello again. Save the best for last. Huh?
Boy,
hold on a second, Rep. Mazin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3435 tries to address a problem. Well, it's a good problem for some counties that they end up with money that is in the road funds, and the road funds in counties or other funds in counties are kept usually in the local government pool at the state treasurer. And I think some counties believe that they could probably loan some of this money to other districts, taxing districts, into the within the county, or this bill allows for outside the county for a higher level of interest, to make that more interest earning into the fund. Now, we have done some type of these assessment adjustments in the past with the federal funds. As you know, the federal funds for the local from the forest receipts are 25% schools, 75% road fund. And we allowed in a few times these amounts to be loaned to different for law enforcement within the county under certain conditions and so on. Now the bill restricts this ability for three counties only, and puts a number of conditions on how the funds to be repaid and how to obligate the taxing authority of the borrowing district into the repayment of the loan and so on. So that's the issue that this bill addresses, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Rob Smith, if you could frame the issue for us and why this tool is needed, as if
yes.
we don't
yes,
see the need already.
Chair Haas, committee, David Brock-Smith, State Representative, House District 1. Thank you for the synopsis of the bill. We have counties that are, as it was stated, that generate road funds through U.S. Forest Service receipts. And the counties in question, Klamath County, for example, has over $80 million in their road fund, and they're currently collecting in the local government investments pool less than 1% interest. This bill would allow them the ability to assist their school district in a new roof, per se, where the school district can either save the money over time and then purchase the roof, or go out for a conventional loan and purchase the roof, or possibly go out for bonding, which then affects the taxpayers, and purchase their new roof. Or this road fund, the Klamath County Road Fund, could then loan the school district with the very specific sideboards that are in this bill, and then pay that back to the road fund over the course of 5 years. I will also add that the current road funds are currently allowed by seven counties to be not loaned to fund public the direct and indirect costs of patrol, but taken. They're not obligated to be paid back at the moment. Curry County, for example, although the general funds to fund county services are very poor, they have roughly $30 million in the road reserve fund, currently collecting less than 1% in the local government investment pool. We have a new hospital that was built in Curry County through a number of mechanisms that the citizens voted on, but we have a facility down in the Brookings Harbor region that was built to hospital specs, and it's actually the largest community, Brookings Harbor, without an emergency department in the state. And this bill will allow the county to loan dollars to the hospital district and allow them to pay down high interest debt that they have right now, where more importantly the county road fund can make more in interest payments and therefore generate more road dollars in interest, and give the hospital district the ability to open that emergency department for its citizens. Or the Port of Brookings Harbor is has a six percent interest loans with the Infrastructure Finance Authority here at the state for $5 million. This would be able to allow the county to loan those dollars again at lower than 6%, but higher than what they're garnering at the local government investment pool, and pay off the high interest debt, and therefore generate more money in the road fund for roads in the state or in the county. This is really the bill that would allow the counties to invest in themselves with regards to other special taxing districts. I worked with Department of Revenue, I worked with LFO, I worked with the Treasurer's Office to make sure the sideboards were in place, and they're all there, and I'm happy to ask any questions.
Senator Boquist.
I'm not sure you want to, but I'm going to anyway.
Go for it.
Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
We're in the process. In fact, I'm editing the transportation plan.
Yes, sir.
And so the force, federal force dollars, of course, come in from the federal force side, what you made reference to and what staff made reference to. But we're going to ask all these and you to vote for a transportation package, which has a 12-cent gas tax increase, of which 30% of that goes directly to the counties. And we have listened to 10 months of testimony about how much money we're short and how there's no maintenance going on, and we need to have this money out in the counties. Yet it now appears, unless I'm missing something, that Curry County, Klamath County, and Yamhill County have are awash in road funds and actually don't need additional funds for road maintenance, so on and so forth. And so those Article 9 funds, which that's what this is, federal dollars or not, Article 9 funds, we now want to be able to have those three counties be able to loan those monies. I get the interest rate, I get all that stuff. Great business, fully supported that concept. But obviously, at least these three counties don't need additional gas tax money for the roads. Am I missing something here?
I wouldn't say that at all, Senator.
Good. That's why I'm asking you, because I've already been asked that question. So,
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, first of all, I can't thank you enough for all of your work on the transportation package, because I know I was at the meeting in Newport when you had the coastal infrastructure, transportation infrastructure meeting as a commissioner representing the South Coast. What these roadmasters, you have to understand, they coveted these dollars that have been coming in for years. And so like the ONC forests that are that those dollars go from the BLM that fund the general fund, the U.S. Forest receipts pre-1980 funded road funds. And so what I had a roadmaster who was there at Curry County for over 40 years. And so he was trying to build up the reserve in that fund so that with the additional road tax dollars that come in, plus the interest that he would be able to receive with that built-up fund, he could keep that and then just use 80% of the interest in the fund and therefore keep on putting 20% back into the fund to roll it over and just keep on building it. I guess in a nutshell, he was attempting to keep the road fund solvent in perpetuity with additional revenues that are coming in and then only needing to hit the reserve for maybe the larger ticket items such as bridges and the matching funds with larger ODOT projects that certainly come in. I'm not familiar with Klamath County's situation, but I can only imagine that they too were able to save those U.S. Forest Service receipts over many, many decades and try to build up a reserve fund to where they could just utilize the interest and the additional revenue that comes in throughout the state. Yamhill County, I believe, is the same. What I did not know in retrospect when I put this bill together is that counties wouldn't want this ability, and that's why it's limited to those three counties, because they don't want the knock at the door saying libraries or, you know, cities or, you know, school districts and so forth. But in no way do these counties not need the transportation package and the revenues that are coming in to assist. They're just trying to build up the reserve, and this tool would allow them to create the interest in order to build that reserve.
Question to staff, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Mazen, we've done federal funds. This is actually state funds here, isn't it, right?
That is correct. This has to do with the state funds, and as we consulted with our legal counsel on this, the idea is that you already have these counties keeping the money in the local government pool. So this is equivalent to not having it, but loaning it and giving more interest. So that's why it is okay under Article 9.
As long as they don't get sued.
Well, I think in the bill, Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, it's still the kernel of the money plus the interest is still subject to Section 9, Article 9. However, the thing is that you are stretching this over 20 years. You're allowing them 20 years of loan, which means it's not really there.
Right, I got that.
And Chair Hassan.
You understand the problem.
Yes, of course.
Chair Hassan, committee, I will say that the loan can be up to 20 years, but of course it's not. The loan could be 1 year. It could be short term.
Right.
It's and the dollars are protected first and foremost. The minimal collateral is the taxing district's taxable income coming in from the residents to secure the loan. And it passed unanimously on the House floor.
Well, just so you know, Representative, we kill bills that pass unanimously.
I'm fully aware.
I'm fully supportive of this whole concept of investing. I'm just pointing out that this is really bad timing, okay?
I'm sorry.
Thank you again.
Questions over here.
I'm sorry, Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the federal funds that we're allowing them to use we're specifying that they've used for patrolling the roads. Is this the same, or is this any agency?
Yes, Senator, this is any agency within the county, and interesting ability that this bill gives is also outside the county. So counties could lend to counties, other counties. Well, counties could lend to districts, taxing districts, within other counties. So, whether they want to or not, but it gives them the ability to do it.
We're stretching.
Senator Burchard.
First question for staff. Are we allowed to reappropriate federal dollars that are dedicated for certain things?
Mr. Chair and Senator Birchiger, you as a legislature have the supreme power to do anything you want. So I guess
you did.
Until the federal government says you can't do that.
Well, the federal government, their strings are less stringent, if you will, especially on the ONC and the safety net dollars than is allowed. So these things kind of accumulate with time, the funds, and these counties that are gifted with the forests seem to have a higher percentage of that money, and they were having a difficult time having tens of millions of dollars in the road fund while they're laying off the road patrol officers and so on. So there was some kind of ability to come and get something in law to do that. And you and your predecessors type of you allowed that to be done.
Comment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bertschinger.
Well, if you go back to the, whether it's ONC dollars or it's federal forest dollars that were received from those monies were put in those accounts to build roads, to have more access to more timber, and that was the whole reason for that, and to keep the county infrastructure, because the commodities produced in those forests got to go down the county roads to get to the mills. So that's where that all came from. My biggest concern with this bill is the lending. The one thing that hasn't been talked about today is if we, or the county, lends money to another entity and that entity goes into default on that loan, then what?
So, Chair Haas, Senator Bertschinger, the sideboards in the bill. So if the county were to loan, if Curry County were to loan Josephine County's school district $1 million to put a new roof on their building, and the school district were to default on that loan, the monies would come out of the tax dollars that are generated by the school district. That's the first collateral that they have to put in the loan. If the county were to loan the dollars to the Port District, for example, to rebuild their dock, that Port District dollars has to put in collateral the 72 cents a thousand that they collect in taxes to run their operation. This again allows the county and the special district to negotiate and then puts the sideboards within the county for collection. The loan just cannot exceed 20 years of the
taxable authority.
The amount of revenues that are coming in from the taxing districts plus interest. So if that fire department needs a new fire truck, and they're very expensive, as you know, this would allow the county to loan that fire department the $250,000 to buy that new fire truck, rather than going out for the bonding or for a fire truck levy, and then the fire district could then pay those dollars back over the course of a 5, 10, 15, or whatever term, not to exceed 10 years. But the fire district, again, has to minimally put up their 23 cents a thousand that they might collect in their fire district as minimal collateral if, in fact, that goes away. Now, I will say that as a former county commissioner, with these tools, if the Port District were to go defunct down at the Port of Brookings Harbor, for example, the county would be the one that would have to step in and take it over, more than likely anyway. If the fire district were to go defunct, the county is the one that is in charge of those areas anyway. And so basically, the county is investing in itself, and this is a tool to allow these counties to assist other special districts around the state, but more importantly, to generate more revenue in that road fund. So where these counties can use the road funds to fund the indirect and direct cost of patrol, in some cases, these loans and the higher interest rate that they would be receiving to grow that road department then can turn around and pay for the dollars that are going out, not as a loan, but as a take to pay for the road patrol within the county, if that makes sense.
Senator Bertschinger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I respectfully disagree with you about your analysis of a fire district or a harbor district or any of those go defunct, that the counties take them over. That's simply not true. Okay. Many counties say, No fire district? No fire district. We have unprotected area. No harbor district? No harbor district. You know, and so I respectfully disagree with that analysis, and I'm surprised the bankers aren't in this meeting because it sounds like the counties are going into the banking business.
Thank you,
Representative. You may have mentioned this in your opening, but the counties you selected, Curry, Klamath, Yamhill, what was?
So these were counties we sent out with the help of the former representative now AOC staff, former Commissioner Susan Morgan, a poll to all the counties in the state to see who would be interested. And so these counties are the counties that are very interested in this bill, especially Klamath County, with the sizable amount that they have and the need within their districts.
Okay, other questions of Representative Rocksmith?
Susan's here.
She just left. I'll tell you what, we're going to, there's enough pause up here that we're going to let this breathe for a while. We're going to meet again on Thursday, so
of course.
We're not going to move it today, and we'll just let things breathe.
Thank you, okay. Senator.
Thank you. And I'll close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3435. We can skip tomorrow and come back on Thursday. So let's meet here again Thursday at 8:30. If not sooner. We are adjourned. If not sooner.